I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. Sitting between Mitt Romney and Ron Paul at last night's presidential debate, Rick Santorum had to fend off attacks about his record in the U.S. Senate and his credentials as a conservative. The audience booed when he explained that he had voted for No Child Left Behind, even though, quote, it was against the principles I believed in. Santorum's surge has put him and his record in the spotlight. His comments about contraception, prenatal testing, public education, and religion have earned him support from the conservative wing of the GOP, while moderate Republicans worry that he's too extreme to beat President Obama. Well, today on Radio Times, we're taking a look at the political career of former Pennsylvania Senator Rick Santorum, and we have three guests. With us in our Philadelphia studios is Will Bunch, senior writer at the Philadelphia Daily News, where he writes the Attitude blog, author most recently of a book called The Backlash. And Will, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Oh, thanks, Marty. Good to be back.
Good to have you here. Also with us and joining us by telephone is Robert Costa, Washington-based political reporter for the National Review. And Robert Costa, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Oh, it's wonderful to be here.
And Michael Young is also with us as well, managing partner of Michael Young Strategic Research, co-author with Terry Madonna of Politically Uncorrected, and that's a twice-monthly column published by Franklin and Marshall College. And Michael Young, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you, Marty. Good to be with you.
Nice to have you with us. And Michael, if I could begin with you, is Rick Santorum the latest not Mitt candidate, or is he winning because of his own particular appeal?
Oh, I think both. There's no question that there's a obsessive search in the Republican Party for, among many Republican voters, for someone who is not Mitt Romney. That's very clear and consistent throughout the primary period. But on the other hand, Santorum has also, I think, found a way to appeal to the hardcore conservatives in the Republican electorate. And it has to be remembered that the people that vote in Republican primaries, as indeed in Democratic primaries, tend to be more ideologically cohesive in terms of the Republicans, much more conservative. And Santorum has, I think, very artfully found a way to appeal late in the campaign to that group of voters.
In fact, you wrote, Michael, that he has appealed and understands the discontent within the Republican Party.
Indeed, he does, and I think he has either, in part through art and part through luck, waited until this point in the campaign to emerge after a number of other frontrunners challenged Romney and then fell by the wayside. It's now Santorum's moment, and it seems like the most auspicious moment of the campaign for someone to take a run at Romney, as he indeed is doing.
Robert Costa, let me get you in on the conversation. You have been following Rick Santorum, covering his campaign. How do you see his appeal to this particular part of the GOP?
I've spent a lot of time with Senator Santorum on the campaign trail, really going all the way back to Iowa when it was just him in a pickup truck going from Des Moines to Fort Dodge and other small towns. And I think his real appeal, sure, is that as a social conservative. But one thing I've really noticed on the trail that doesn't get enough discussion is his appeal on the economy. He has a different kind of economic plan. His main part of his economic plan is having a corporate tax exemption for manufacturing, eliminating the corporate tax for manufacturers. And that's an important part of his blue-collar appeal coming out of Western Pennsylvania. He talks up manufacturing, and I think it resonates on the trail, and especially against Mitt Romney, a former Bain executive. Santorum, even as a former senator, can come across as someone who connects, especially in the Rust Belt in places like Michigan, Pittsburgh, Ohio.
But, Robert, interestingly, it's the social issues, and Rick Santorum has been talking about these. It's the social issues that have gotten so much attention in the last, let's say, week or so.
No, and you're hitting on a key point, and this is a problem for the Santorum campaign. Even when you speak to Santorum advisors, they acknowledge that one of the reasons they were connecting is because of their economic blue-collar message. But Santorum has he often gets distracted, and he's been distracted this past week. He's taking the bait in a lot of ways from the media and talking about contraception and Judeo-Christian heritage and using words like theology when talking about President Obama, and it's going away from his core message and his appeal, and I think that's hurting him. And you see Romney coming back with his economic message, his speech at the Detroit Economic Club tomorrow, his new tax plan, and Santorum seems mired in this strange social conservative world where he's talking about Bayer aspirin between the knees, defending or talking about Foster Freeze. It's not Santorum's sweet spot, and that's been a problem for him in recent days.
Let me get you in on the conversation. Will Bunch, do you see Rick Santorum as a polarizing figure?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, he does have this tendency where he can't help himself of coming back to these social issues. And I think a lot of it is because people are interested in his views on social issues because, sex that he likes to talk about, whether his famous quote about man-on-dog sex or all these issues about abortion or gay marriage, I think are topics that capture the public's fancy a lot more than taxes on manufacturing, even though in the long run for the health of America and the American economy, you know, his tax policy may be a lot more important, especially, you know, the reality of what a president can or can't change when it comes to abortion or laws about gay marriage, for example. But, I think the media is fascinated. I mean, he has this image, you know, going all the way back to his famous Google problem that gets talked about so much. And it's what the late night comics and the Jon Stewarts of the world like to talk about. And it becomes, an obsession. And people like to ask him about these issues. And when they ask him, he'll talk about it.
But, so. I mean, all those issues are important. But it seems to me when someone is running for office, especially for the president of the United States, what they say, it doesn't matter what the issue is, what they say or have said matters.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, when you have a guy who's running for president who in 2008 described what's happening in the United States as a possible war against Satan, that matters to people. When they're going into a voting booth for president, they're thinking that's something that's such a deep philosophical concept that it's like, do I really want a president of the United States who's going to take the oath of office January 20, 2013, thinking we're at war with Satan?
Well, you know what? We have a couple of clips that I want to play, clips by Rick Santorum and spoken in the last couple of days. Let's begin with the first one where he talks about prenatal care. Let's listen to that.
One of the things that you don't know about Obamacare and one of the mandates is they require free prenatal testing in every insurance policy in America. Why? Because it saves money in healthcare. Why? Because free prenatal testing ends up in more abortions and therefore less care that has to be done because we cull the ranks of the disabled in our society.
Robert Costa, let me go back to you. And he really is comparing prenatal care to eugenics.
Look, this is the problem with Santorum campaign. Santorum has spent the last 6 years in the political wilderness. He lost his Senate race bad, 18 points, 2006 against Bob Casey. And since then, he has been a conservative figure. I work for National Review. I cover conservative events. I talk to conservative activists. And Santorum has been in that world, that social conservative evangelical world. And I think all of his activities have been a real boost to him in many ways as he comes into this presidential campaign, started out as a dark horse. But because he established new roots, the Tea Party evangelical movements post-Senate, it's really enabled him to move on and change his reputation among conservatives. At the same time, his time in the wilderness has made quotes like these come back to haunt him in the campaign. And even now, he's not being able to articulate a broad general election type message. Instead, he's really being almost pushed into a corner, not only by Romney, but by the whole process, and not elevating himself beyond what he has been for the last 5-6 years, which is really a conservative movement figure, not really even a famous one at that, but one who connects with Catholics and evangelicals. And this statement is an example of Santorum's liabilities as a candidate, that he doesn't have a real campaign organizationally, but in terms of a message, it's often muddled. He has a lot of strong points. People like his gritty persona, but at the same time, he's said a lot of things that irk the most important voters in this country, independent.
And Michael Young, let me get you back into the conversation as well. How do you think a statement like that would play in a state like Pennsylvania, which certainly has conservative strains?
Well, I think it's going to what he's really doing in terms of Pennsylvania politics is he is not so subtly reintroducing the topic of abortion or eugenics, but that is the most polarizing topic, perhaps second only to guns, Second Amendment in Pennsylvania, and it has been a vehicle for him since the very beginning of his career. He's written it very, very artfully in most cases. But I think, if I could just back up just a half a turn.
Sure.
I think that that it's been my view and that of my colleague Terry Madonna, and we have written about it in the past, that the beginning of this campaign, Rick really saw himself as a conservative in the race and wanted to become the last conservative standing in the race for a chance at the vice presidency. I don't think he ever saw at the beginning a chance at the brass ring. That opportunity now has presented itself to him, and I think it's opened up a whole world of possibilities that weren't there before, and he is now confounded by the dichotomy between the campaign that he was running and the one he now has to run in order to become the nominee. And I think that's causing him to fumble, as he did last night at the debate. If you saw that, he did not perform well at all. He is not good on defense, and he's not particularly good when he gets off the social issues. But I don't think he ever intended to have to do that. And so this is, for him, a new challenge that was unexpected.
Well, that's interesting. Will, you want to weigh on that? I know you watched the debate last night, as did I. Part of my job, part of your job as well.
Absolutely.
How did Santorum do from your perspective?
It was not a great night for him. I don't think he seriously damaged his candidacy, but I think Michael's right on the money. I think I saw him spending almost his entire time on the defensive. There were a couple things that stood out. One, there was just a long, seemingly endless discussion about earmarks, and they really got into the weeds. I mean, they probably caused a lot of voters to turn off their sets because it was just so technical and just kind of.
But they were very impassioned about it
with each other. Yeah, absolutely. And the bottom line is, there's been a major change in politics in the last decade. I mean, 10 years ago, when Rick Santorum was still in the Senate, if you were a Republican or a Democrat, bringing home the bacon was the best thing you could do as a politician. And Rick Santorum's a smart guy, and he really worked hard on bringing home the bacon for Pennsylvania. I mean, that was a major. He had a lot of people on the staff are really devoted to trying to find federal dollars for different projects around the state, the Black clergy of Philadelphia. I mean, there are all kinds of things that he brought money in for. And after Obama's election, we had this radical change with the arrival of the Tea Party movement. And suddenly, any kind of federal program, even if it was taking money from the federal coffers and benefiting people in the state you represented, used to be a huge plus, if you got something in a bill for your own state. But now there are all these, Bridge to Nowhere type projects or whatever.
And we heard that several times last night.
Yeah, right, absolutely. And so Santorum is trying to defend 16 years of that in Washington, and it's hard. And the other thing is, compromise is disdained. Santorum thought it was good for his political career as an incoming senator to forge a close relationship with Arlen Specter, because Arlen Specter was a senior Republican. He was, a high ranking on committees, as he talked about last night. Chairman of the Judiciary Committee, a lot of influence, and now Santorum is getting savaged for being a friend of Arlen Specter.
And so, this is the political world that we live in.
Right.
We're going to take a very short break and then get back to our conversation. We are talking about the rise and, I guess, fall and rise of Rick Santorum, a former senator from Pennsylvania, running for the White House to be the Republican presidential nominee, talking with Will Bunch, Robert Costa, and Michael Young. And we want to hear from you. What do you make of the Santorum candidacy and at least surge so far? 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
10,000 Villages in Ephrata supports WHYY. Their annual rug event ends this Saturday, featuring the Fair Trade Bunyad Rug Collection of over 1,500 hand-knotted rugs. Online at rugs.10,000villages.com.
I'm Jesse Thorne. David Wayne directed a movie called Wet Hot American Summer. It's a film that I have watched a ridiculous number of times. I love it. And there are thousands of people just like me around the world.
The critics didn't agree.
I'll talk to Wayne about Wet Hot and his new movie, Wanderlust, on Bullseye from PRI.
Tomorrow night at 9 on WHYY.
Arizona hosts the final GOP presidential debate before Super Tuesday. Rick Santorum and Mitt Romney are battling for the lead to win their party's nomination, but Newt Gingrich and Ron Paul haven't thrown in the towel. Who is making moves and who's stuck in a rut? We'll bring you up to date next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
WHYY programming is supported by the teachers and education support professionals of the Pennsylvania State Education Association, educating all children for a bright future. We are PSEA. providing the power of a great education.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane. We are talking about Rick Santorum and his candidacy, his current surge, and what that says about the Republican Party and the race for the White House. Our guests are Michael Young. He's managing partner of Michael Young Strategic Research, co-author with Terry Madonna of Politically Uncorrected. That's a twice monthly column. It's published by Franklin and Marshall College here in Pennsylvania. Robert Costa, also joining us, Washington-based political reporter for National Review. He covers the White House, Congress, and campaigns and has been covering the Santorum campaign. And also with us is Will Bunch, senior writer for the Philadelphia Daily News. He writes the Attitude blog. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Let me play another clip, and this is Rick Santorum speaking recently about public schools.
But the idea that the federal government should be running schools, frankly, much less that the state government should be running schools, is anachronistic. It goes back to the time of industrialization of America when people came off the farms where they did homeschool or have the little neighborhood school and into these big factories. So we built equal factories called public schools.
Robert Costa, let me go back to you. And again, using this that particular clip and this issue, is this a winning issue to criticize public schools, compare them to factories, and call them essentially anachronistic?
I think Santorum may have a winning issue in being a critic of public education. We saw the protests in Madison, Wisconsin earlier this year. There's a deep concern, especially among conservative voters, and so this is important in a primary, about the public sector unions, and especially the teacher unions. And I think Santorum's hitting that. He understands the pulse that's going through the conservative movement, the dissatisfaction with the power of the public sector unions in the Obama era. And he's going after that. And I think there's a lot of, especially in a recession economy, there is concern about the education system. Now, we could say Santorum's rhetoric is way too harsh. To call it a factory is not perhaps the most apt language. But at the same time, he's hitting at the anger and frustration that is out there, and that you see it on the campaign trail. And that kind of line, though we may wag our finger at it now, it gets cheers on the campaign trail, and it does resonate with a certain block of voters.
Will, let me get you back in on the conversation. You wrote something, was in the Huffington Post, A Pennsylvania's Guide to the Rick Santorum You Don't Know. Mm-hmm. And number four of your list of 10 is Santorum didn't seem to be against government waste when it came to his family, talking about the fact that his children are homeschooled, and he was able to have the Penn Hills School District in western Pennsylvania pay something like $72,000 for the cyber schooling of his five children.
Yeah, absolutely. And this issue came up a lot during his 2006 campaign for a third term in Pennsylvania, the one that he lost by 18 points. And I think a lot of things hurt him in that campaign, but that was something that really hurt a lot because it exposed him to a charge of hypocrisy. And, you know, frankly, I'm a little surprised that the Romney campaign hasn't used this because, you know, I think it plays right to the Tea Party's concerns about government waste. I mean, you know, as Robert was saying, if you think the teachers' unions waste money or squander money, I mean, here's Santorum demanding this handout from a Pennsylvania school district to homeschool his kids in Virginia. I mean, that's the whole thing. I mean, he claimed his residency in Penn Hills for voting purposes.
Penn Hills, Pennsylvania.
Which is a suburb of Pittsburgh, but a place that he basically rents out to a cousin or relative and lives in a large house in Virginia, and that's where he's homeschooling his kids. Just one thing real quick about the homeschooling thing is, you know, I mean, let's remember, especially when you get into the general election, most Americans send their children to public schools. And I think you know, when you want a president who understands issues affecting people like me, you know, to have a president who homeschooled his kids, who doesn't know what it's like to send his kids to a public school. And look, most I think Americans just want their public schools to get better, you know, and they don't want a president who seems to be on a mission to destroy public education in this country, and Santorum certainly comes off that way.
And Michael Young, let me go back to you and even go back to 2006 when Rick Santorum lost big. He was running against Robert Casey Jr. Casey, of course, a very famous Pennsylvania name. But what can we, I guess, learn from what happened in 2006? And do you see any vestiges of that today?
Well, I think in 2006, as we have written in the article that we have now circulating about that election, there were a lot of political cards turned against Santorum, and I believe he would have lost that election had he run a good campaign. But he didn't run a good campaign, and I think that is relevant to the discussion that we're having right now. He became very undisciplined and unfocused at many points in the campaign and seemed to go out of his way to pick a fight and to become contentious and to become polarizing. And we have seen the absence of that behavior until the last 2 weeks in the presidential race. Now suddenly it's reemerging. We saw it last night to some extent, but even more so in the 2 weeks before last night's debate. He now seems to be the old Rick, if you will, who is a bit of a loose cannon and not careful with what he says and tends to say things that make people angry or polarizing. And I think that is becoming the wild card in the race. Which Santorum are we going to see from this point forward? Is he going to go back to his more disciplined game, which we saw in the first 7 months of the campaign, or is he going to become the Rick Santorum of 2006, in which case I think he's very likely to lose in Michigan and perhaps later and quickly fall from the heights that he's now achieved.
Robert Costa, let me go back to you since you cover Republicans and have focused on conservative Republicans. But how does the party establishment, if I can use that word, how do they see Rick Santorum?
It's a complicated question. I think too often the national media focuses on 2006, and they say that is the key example, the case study to look at for Santorum. But the story is more complex. His political career has had ups and downs, and there is some positive message from his past victories. For instance, he won tough statewide election 1994 against Harris Wofford, won in 2000, got a better margin than President Bush in Pennsylvania. He won in western Pennsylvania in 90 and 92. And the thing about Santorum that makes conservative establishment, Republican donors, and Republican strategists a little optimistic should he snag this nomination, is that he still has guys like John Brabender, who's been his strategist since 1990, his first House race, around him, who understand that you have to run a statewide type campaign, a campaign that can appeal to all types of voters. That Santorum, he's not just a candidate coming out of a House seat in a very conservative area. You have to remember he has won in Pennsylvania twice as a U.S. Senator, and that's not an easy feat. And so as much as there's a concern that he's a little unplugged at times, that he's a bit too extemporaneous, this is a little interesting anecdote, he never reads from a prepared text. Mm-hmm. He only takes note cards, even in major policy addresses like the Detroit Economic Club and his speech at the Conservative Political Action Conference a couple weeks ago in Washington. He goes up there and he basically wings it. He has his message on his mind and he speaks it. But that doesn't mean it means he doesn't really have a coherent message all the time. But at the same time, he hasn't disciplined before. I think the point about the new Rick or old Rick is a very relevant one. And I think for now, you're seeing a mix of both.
I'm seeing a mix of both. But and I know you can't speak for the Obama administration, Will Bunch.
No.
But I'm wondering whether they are enjoying this Republican race for the White House, or certainly race for the nomination.
Oh my gosh! I mean, I think President Obama was the big winner. The more of these debates that the Republicans have, and the longer this campaign drags on, and especially the last couple of weeks, with this focus on the social issues, and this has happened for a variety of reasons. I think one reason, but not the only one, is the economy is getting better. It's not great. I mean, it'd be horrible if we forgot about the millions of people who are long-term unemployed. But the unemployment numbers are getting better. I mean, we had the Dow briefly crossing 13,000. Good news out of GM, which is a big issue about whether the government should have bailed out GM. So on all these fronts of news, so you see the conversation turning to these social issues. And I think, I think so many of the things that we're talking about, whether it's birth control or some of these other issues, are issues where a majority of Americans have moderate to liberal views on these things. And I think they play out very well for President Obama. And I think when you look at some of these things like this law in Virginia about the ultrasound law and some of these other things, I think a sleeping giant has really been waked up, and a lot of women women who had taken their reproductive rights for granted, I've really seen just this enormous energy. And actually, I guess it started with this whole Susan G. Komen controversy, which had nothing to do directly with the presidential race. Right. But do you think you've seen a lot of issues now where women who've been kind of passive politically because they had won a lot of victories for a number of years now see these threats and they're very energized. And I think that may play out in the fall.
And I would assume you're including Republican women among those energized.
Absolutely, and especially kind of a stereotypical swing voter, which might be a suburban voter who might be a little bit conservative on economic issues, but when it comes to these social issues, tends to be moderate to liberal.
And I do want to get to our callers, but Robert Costa, do you want to weigh in on that just briefly? And I'm thinking about Republican women, and more anecdotally than anything else, there seemed to be some concern that their party through this candidate is rethinking things like contraception and privacy and some what many consider to be established law.
I respectfully disagree, and that's not really what I'm hearing from Republican women, at least when I'm on the campaign trail. On this contraception debate seems to have awakened many conservative women, especially evangelical Catholic women, that this is not only a contraception debate, but it's about religious freedom, and there's concern that the Obama administration maybe has overstepped its bounds by forcing the Catholic Church and others to apply with federal standards on personal religious issues. And so as much as there is concern maybe among independent women, moderate Republican women, that Rick Santorum's approach to moral issues is not perhaps up their alley, at the same time, a lot of social conservatives are up in arms about the Obama administration's decisions, and that's a help in many ways to the Republicans who are trying to get some energy behind these candidates.
Now, Michael Young, you want to weigh in on that? Then we'll get to our callers.
Well, I think that, to put it perhaps a little more baldly, if the Republicans indeed do try to run on social issues in the general election in 2012, in the midst of this still slow recovery, they lose. I think it's short and sweet. You cannot win a general election this year, presidential election, running on social issues, I do not believe. It's one thing to galvanize the base and to get excitement there and perhaps even to win a nomination doing that. But whoever the nominee is, be it Romney or be it Santorum, they have got to be able to seg to a much more moderate position. And this race, as it continues and unfolds, is making it harder and harder for both Romney and Santorum to, I think, eventually do that, to move back toward the center where the independents are and the swing voters are in order to win the election.
Well, we are talking
Marty, a quick point.
Yeah, very quickly, Robert.
The Catholics are a quarter of the country, and don't think that they're not going to have some dissatisfaction at the polls. Social conservative may not play generally, but it has some resonance with a lot of voters.
But just, and we've done shows about this, Robert, so I don't want to get off on a tangent here, but we also learned that the majority of Catholics have used some form of contraception in their lifetime.
Oh, true, but it's a more complicated debate about religious freedom as well.
And we are talking about Rick Santorum and his bid for the Republican nomination for president. Robert Costa, the voice you just heard, is joining us along with Michael Young and Will Bunch, and we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Let me get Elaine from Reading to join our conversation. Elaine, go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I feel like you've been talking about me. I'm a 52-year-old moderate Republican. I am a Catholic. I went to law school with Rick Santorum. I was a supporter of his. I've had him to my home. I've raised a lot of money for him. And the thought that he might become the Republican candidate horrifies me.
Why is that? Why is that, Elaine?
Because I think when you hear him at his most right-wing hysterical, you see the real Rick Santorum, the Rick Santorum that would occupy the White House and whose mission would be to reform all of the rest of us from a moral perspective.
Elaine, it's a fascinating phone call. Let me see. Let me toss that first to Robert Costa. And I do that, Robert, only because you've been covering Santorum and know more about the Republican Party probably than the rest of us do. Go ahead.
Rick Santorum is going to have some problems if he wins this nomination because his approach is very strident, his morality is crystal clear, and that turns a lot of people off. I think the election is about the economy, but I think at the same time, there's a tendency to look at Santorum and how he handles social conservatism and say, oh, he's saying things that alienate voters and that could never win in a general election. Whereas if you follow him on the campaign trail, you realize that he's not really a radical figure. He has long, sprawling town hall meetings. And what's the biggest theme? The family. He talks about the family, his own family, how the family is important for the economy. And this gets a lot of heads nodding in the audiences across at least Republican groups. And I think this hits at what Santorum is doing. He's not going out there and trying to be a culture warrior. His problem is he's so visceral in his responses, and he engages with reporters constantly when they pepper him questions about these kind of issues, contraception and others, that the media reports can seem like he's out there just railing against the Obama administration's policies on moral issues. But at the same time, to Republican voters, they see a family-oriented, blue-collar, pro-manufacturing Republican, and that's an interesting new type of candidate, and I think that's why he may hang around.
Go ahead, Will.
Well, I think Elaine's really hit on something that's a real problem for Santorum, which is so often, and maybe this isn't the bulk of his talks, but it's a lot of what gets portrayed in the media, is these statements where he seems to portray everything in these apocalyptic terms, you know, that everything that out there is the you know, end time struggle between good and evil. You know, one thing we haven't talked about on this show is his foreign policy ideas, and I mean, I think to me that's one of the most frightening parts of his, of his candidacy, is the fact that, I mean, for a number of years going back to his 06 campaign, I mean, he's looked at Iran and he seems to view the Middle East, in these fiery terms that, you know, most
apocalyptic terms.
Apocalyptic, yeah, absolutely, and you know, most Americans. The last thing we want is another war in that region. And, Santorum sees himself as this kind of Winston Churchill figure that, that he's the un-Neville Chamberlain, that he would never appease these people. And it's a very warlike, very moralistic thing. And when you combine that with his religious views, which, you know, seem to have this kind of end times quality to them, it's I think it's frightening to a lot of voters.
Well, and Michael Young, about a minute or so before we have to take another break here, but just picking up on what Will and Robert, and I think what Elaine is saying as well, what we get from Santorum is a kind of certainty. I mean, as I listen to him, he believes what he says. Does that have some kind of appeal?
Well, I think it scares a lot of people. It has appeal, certainly, to some people, but it scares many others. One of the things that I find fascinating about Elaine's statement is that when you talk to people around Pennsylvania, Republican politicians and political types who know Rick pretty well, they seem to be the most concerned about him possibly becoming the Republican nominee. And I think that's very telling and quite interesting that the very people that know him best seem most concerned about that eventuality.
Well, we are talking about Rick Santorum and asking and looking for answers to this question. Is he electable? Widely considered an underdog not so long ago. He is now surging in the polls. The voice you just heard is Michael Young, co-author with Terry Madonna of a twice-monthly column. It's published by Franklin and Marshall College here in Pennsylvania called Politically Uncorrected. He's also managing partner of Michael Young Strategic Research. Robert Costa, Washington-based political reporter for National Review, has been covering the Santorum race, and also with us is Will Bunch. He's a senior writer at the Philadelphia Daily News, writes the Attitude blog, and we do want to get some more callers in on the conversation at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. After this short break, we're going to play another clip as well. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Philadelphia International Flower Show supports WHYY and presents Hawaii Islands of Aloha, March 4th through the 11th at the Pennsylvania Convention Center, featuring a 30-foot waterfall, an orchid display, live hula dancers, and special events, including afternoon tea, weddings Wednesday, girls' night out, and family day with the Lorax. Also design competitions, floral and culinary demos, and wine and spirits tastings. Sponsored by Bank of America. Details online at theflowershow.com.
On the next Fresh Air, the impact of super PACs on the presidential campaign. We talk with Trevor Potter, a former member of the Federal Elections Committee, who advises Stephen Colbert on his super PAC, and James Bopp, the lawyer who initiated the Citizens United case that ended up in the Supreme Court and opened the door to super PACs. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. There's been talk of a brokered Republican convention. What's the difference between that and a deadlocked or contested convention? We'll get a primer. Also, Downton Abbey is over. Long live the Downton Abbey books. We'll review all three. They might sustain us until season 3. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. We are talking about former Pennsylvania Senator Rick Santorum and taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. What do you make of his candidacy, and what does that say about his party, the Republican Party, and the state of electoral politics? Let me play another clip, and again, this is Rick Santorum talking about Obama's policies not being based on the Bible. Let's listen.
It's not about you. It's not about you. It's not about your quality of life. It's not about your jobs. It's about some phony ideal, some phony theology. Oh, not a theology based on the Bible, different theology.
And again, that was Rick Santorum. Let me actually get Steve from Reading to join our conversation. And Steve, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I'm a pastor of a Protestant church in Reading, PA, and the question of theology is hugely important to me. I see Mr. Santorum as nothing different from Jerry Falwell or an Ayatollah. I mean, his brand of Christianity is so heartless and harsh, it frightens me to death to think of him being an elected official in any way in this country, because he's in a sense trying to build up a sense of theocracy that happens in places like Iran.
Well, Steve, let me get some response from our guests, and I appreciate the call. And Michael Young, let me begin with you. And I've heard this from other people as well, which is that there are some parallels between Rick Santorum and people in a theocracy.
Well, I think that Steve is articulating a very common concern among many modern centrists and even some evangelicals that Santorum's efforts to introduce religion and theology and these issues into a presidential campaign are wholly inappropriate and frightening. And that that has limited, I think, his ability to communicate beyond that social issue base, which he has, as we've discussed earlier in the program, been very successful with. But he is a extremely polarizing figure when he begins to talk about those issues, as he has in the last 2 weeks in the campaign, and as he did in Pennsylvania in 2006. And that has been for him a benefit in terms of gaining Republican nominations in the past, but it also in 2006 and perhaps this year will be the reason that he ultimately loses.
Robert Casa, you want to weigh in on that?
I think to say that Santorum is advocating in any sense a theocracy is absurd. I mean, that's not what he's talking about. He's using theology in the sense that he thinks Obama is applying radical policies to the environment, to regulatory policy. Is theology a controversial word? Of course, it also gets our attention. He's a politician. He's looking for headlines. But I don't find him to be this figure who's preaching a theocracy. Is he preaching moral values? Sure, and that is ruffles some feathers in many camps. But he's out there on the trail talking as a social conservative, and this is not new in American politics, and I don't think he's a Jerry Falwell type, or he's an Ayatollah, a high cleric of any sort. This is a social conservative politician from Pennsylvania who uses words that get him attention, and this is one reason why he's been able to step over so many other Romney alternatives. It's because he knows there's a real frustration out there among social conservatives and just among conservatives in general that President Obama is applying the culture of the faculty lounge, not anything else, to his policies, and that's disconcerting to many voters.
And is that code, Robert, for what, secular policies?
Not secular per se, but I think Santorum is concerned that President Obama is following a mode of governing that is much more about not secular policies, but policies that adhere to an ideological leftist worldview, not secular per se, but an ideological lefty point of view, and Santorum disagrees with that. Now, we can disagree with how he handles that, but that's his point, and to say it's anything more than that, that he's secretly eyeing a theocracy, is just out there.
Go ahead, Will.
I have to disagree with that. I mean, I grew up, and a lot of people at the tail end of the baby boom grew up in the shadow of John F. Kennedy, and one of the hallmarks, and this was just viewed as settled history when I was growing up, was the fact that JFK had kind of settled the separation of church and state issue in presidential politics once and for all with his famous speech that he gave to the pastors down in Texas, where he talked about how he wouldn't be answering to the Vatican.
You don't think Santorum has that same view?
He doesn't. Go back and check, Robert. He has said publicly that he does not agree with that JFK speech. He said it on several occasions, and that's a radical change in this country.
I think he does believe in separating the church and state. That would be news if he did not believe in that.
Well, he's renounced the JFK speech. Now, he's renounced aspects of that speech, and he said that you should look at a person's spirituality in deciding that. One of the things, and the caller whose name I forgot, I apologize.
That's Steve.
Yes, Steve's point, I think he didn't mention, but I wonder if it was inspired partly by these comments that were just publicized, in which Santorum basically questioned whether mainline Protestants, i.e. Protestants who are not fundamentalists, he questioned their Christianity, basically. And this is the tradition the religious tradition that I grew up in, and millions of Americans grew up in this tradition, and he's questioned whether there's such a thing as liberal Christianity. And I think that's something, first of all, it's offensive to millions of people, number one, and it just, why is this being talked about in presidential politics?
Well, I'm going to let
could I add one?
Go ahead, Michael, then we'll get to Charlotte.
I think it's an important point to what both just said, and that is that Santorum, I don't think, is opposed to separation of church and state. I think he doesn't understand it. To him, secularism is a competing theology, as it were, and he sees Obama and Obama policies as being a competing theology. I think that's why he used that word. I think it was very purposeful. And rather than what I think most Americans think, secularism means separation of church and state. It doesn't mean a competing theology. It's not a theology in itself. So I don't think that Santorum, in his public remarks at least, really understands what the consensus is among most Americans about what separation of church means.
Let me get Charlotte from Lansdale to call in or to take your call. Charlotte, go ahead. You're on Radio Times. Number two, Charlotte? No? Let's try Richard from Westchester. And Richard, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm a senior. And as a senior, I'm concerned about issues that, most seniors are concerned about. There is a group called Alliance for Retired Americans in Washington. They grade voting records of congressmen and senators. They score them from 0 to 100. Rick Santorum has a lifetime record of 2 out of 100. Now, he was talking about Pennsylvania seniors. I cannot support anybody that is not friendly to seniors.
Well, Richard, let me take your comments. And actually, Robert, this came up last night at the debate where Rick Santorum talked about means testing Social Security. He wants to, I think, unlike most other candidates, wants to take a hard look at some of these entitlement programs, including Social Security and Medicare. You want to weigh in on that,
Robert? It's a fascinating question from the caller. If you look back at Santorum's record, he has been dogged by his stance on entitlement reform since he really got into politics. In 1994, he made a similar comment about Social Security, about means testing, about maybe even raising the age for retirement age. And he almost lost that election. He dropped in the polls almost immediately after he said this in a town hall meeting in 94. But Santorum, sure, by that group's rating, he may have a rating of 2. But to many conservatives and Republicans, this is positive that he's always talking about the fiscal calamity this country faces, and he wants to reform Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. And he's been more forceful on these issues than many other the contenders in the field. And I think this is a plus for Santorum, and to many voters, even Ron Paul-type voters, who look at the federal government and scratch their heads wondering how we're going to pay for all these entitlements. And so it may not be perfect senior-friendly politics, but it's an important position, and I think it has some play.
Do you give him credit to Michael Young for taking that stance?
Well, I do, but I think it was also telling last night. He also went to some effort to contrast entitlement reform with reducing spending for defense, which he renounced as an option for him or his presidency. And I think that puts him very squarely in that circle of people who are interested in cutting domestic programs, including many of the kinds of programs that our caller is presumably interested in, not looking elsewhere for the necessary cuts or increases in revenues that we clearly need to deal with our debt problem.
Will, I know you want to weigh in on that. Go ahead.
Well, just briefly to say that I think a lot of moderate voters don't see that as a very serious position, that you can't cut $1 out of the Pentagon budget. I mean, this is the home of the, you know, $800 toilet seat or whatever it is that they waste money on. And yet, you know, in this bubble of Republican primary politics, you know, the Pentagon has to be a sacred cow. And I think a lot of voters, you know, just hear cut after cut for poor people. And it's like, you know, enough already. There's other ways to balance the budget besides just cutting welfare. You know?
I agree.
And that was you, Michael Young?
Yes, that was.
Let me raise something. And Robert, let me go back to you. And actually, it was something that was posted. What am I reading here? I think it was Huffington Post. But anyways, it goes back to a campaign press release that Santorum released back in the year 1990, almost ancient history. And I'll quote from it. Abortion is such a deeply wrenching issue because it poses a conflict between essential values. The unborn child's very life is at stake. The mother's future often hangs in the balance, too, as an unwanted pregnancy can be unspeakably traumatic as well as limiting her educational, personal, and job opportunities. He goes on, thus a sensitivity to the genuine concerns of both sides is needed. I could continue, but it seems as if he has become much more hardline on this issue of abortion. He's even talking about abortion doctors being charged with crimes.
Rick Santorum has had an interesting political...
Go ahead, Robert. Yeah, go ahead, Robert.
He started off his career, he said this publicly, that before he got into politics, he was just generally pro-choice, and that it was once he got into politics that his views really started to go to the right on life issues, and it was especially his experience with his son Gabriel, who passed away, that really made him value the sanctity of life. And he's had an evolution on the position, and a lot of people think Rick Santorum, he must have been a culture warrior his entire life, but it was really only for the past 2 decades. And the thing about Rick Santorum is that this has some play, I think, in the primary, because it shows that, unlike Mitt Romney, who seemed to just flip on a dime, he has a real narrative to attach to his pro-life positions. And look, I don't think this is a gotcha piece from the Huffington Post. I think they're pointing out that Santorum was a different type of candidate when he came into Pittsburgh politics in the early 90s, and right now he is much more farther to the right. But I don't think abortion hurts him, really. It's not hurting him in the primary. And to have a pro-life general election candidate for the Republicans, that's nothing new.
Michael Young, go ahead.
Well, there's no question that there's been an evolution. That is the closest I've heard to a liberal statement from him since he entered politics, which was that was the year he entered his first race for Congress. But if you go back even further, entree into electoral politics was back in 1976 when he was Penn State campus coordinator for the John Hines campaign. And Hines, as we all know, was a Rockefeller Republican, to use that old term, but certainly
an ancient term.
A liberal Republican. Pardon me?
No, I was saying an ancient term, but by today's standards.
It is, but a moderate, today's standards, perhaps, certainly a moderate-leaning left. And so that's where he started, and there has been this evolution to where he is today.
Well, let me throw Mitt Romney into our discussion here, and I wonder whether Rick Santorum has further expose some of Mitt Romney's vulnerabilities, because you've got someone, yes, he might have changed his position on abortion, but certainly he speaks with great great certainty today, and we know a lot about Mitt Romney's track record.
Right. Well, I think Michael hit the nail on the head when there's a difference between an evolution and a flip-flop, basically. And, you know, in Santorum's case, I mean, it's clear that there is an evolution. And, I think a lot of people may disagree with his beliefs, but he clearly believes what he believes, and I don't think anybody questions that. And, you know, I mean, Romney still flip-flops on things from week to week, and you look at abortion, which is the issue we've just been talking about. I mean, you know, Romney's switch on that as governor of Massachusetts just seems like total political calculation. Mm-hmm. It's been that way in a number of issues. And if you look at why Santorum's leading in the national polls right now, I think that's really the difference between the two of them. It's the authenticity issue.
Well, we have about a minute before we have to say goodbye. And Robert Koss, I don't know if you're a betting man or not. How do you see the Rick Santorum candidacy proceeding?
Still an uphill climb. He has organizational challenges, financial challenges. Romney is in it for the long haul. Santorum needs a strong Michigan, maybe even win it, and he needs a very strong Super Tuesday, and he needs Newt to drop out. Unless all those things come together, it's still going to be a tough road ahead.
And, you know, just picking up on that, Robert, I mean, it is interesting that Newt Gingrich is, you know, they put him on the edge of the stage yesterday and not in the middle, and it wasn't so long ago he won, you know, a primary in the South.
And real quick, watch out. Super Tuesday, Georgia, Gingrich's home state. Tennessee, two southern states. Gingrich won South Carolina a month ago. If Gingrich has a good night on Tuesday, March 6th, he's still in this hunt.
Well, but even before
go ahead,
that,
Michael.
Michigan, I think, is going to be the determiner. If Romney loses Michigan, then I think this thing we're back in the Wild West. But if he does indeed win it, I think he's on his way to the nomination.
And you think, will the Pennsylvania have a chance to weigh in on candidate Rick Santorum?
Yeah,
well,
Santorum, hold on, that's too well.
Santorum is going to have trouble, I think, holding on to the lead he has in Pennsylvania now. If he loses Michigan and states in between, and Super Tuesday is going to be also very important, and I think that calculus.
Right, I think late April is an eternity, but I think Santorum's expected to hold his home state, so I think Pennsylvania's importance may be overrated a little bit.
Well, on that note, my thanks to all three of you. Will Bunch, thanks for joining us today on Radio Times. Robert Costa, thank you for joining us as well, and Michael Young, we appreciate your being part of Radio Times today. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times, and you can find out much more about this program, including joining our Facebook page, Twitter, email, the archives. It's all there for you. I'm Marty Moscowen. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. We'll be right back.